Okay, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to our full year results. Thank you to Morgan Stanley for hosting us here in Canary Wharf, and congratulations to those that have made it in. Nice to see you all. As usual, I'm joined by our CFO, John Risenstein, and also Mike Holley-Williams is going to share his thoughts on a few key topics a bit later. Other members of my executive committee are generally on the front row, and you can ask them questions after, maybe over a volleyball. So we're going to begin with a brief overview of the highlights before handing over to John. So we think these are a good set of results from 2015 as we continue to benefit from our long-term improvement program. At the start of 2015, we re-articulated our strategy, and on slide 3, you can see that, I'm sure you'll agree, some pretty good numbers, all of which demonstrate that the initiatives which underpin our strategy are working. We're making real progress in becoming a great retailer again. We're more competitive. Customers are responding well to our services and to our propositions. And Direct Line is the most preferred brand in the market, with Churchill at number 2. All of this has led to growth in our motor and home own brand portfolio. And we're getting more efficient. Our ongoing focus has helped us to reduce our cost base again, down 4.6%. One of the ways we're doing this is by managing customer claims more efficiently through digital channels, and this has led to faster settlement times. We're also moving back to becoming a disruptor again. Telematics policies more than doubled, Green Flag continued to challenge the AA and the RAC, and Direct Line for Business broke through 400,000 policies. And our clear strategy has also enabled us to meet or exceed our targets in 2015. We delivered a combined ratio of 94%, which adjusted for normal weather was 93%, and better than the guidance we set out at the start of the year. ROTE increased again to 18.5%, well ahead of our 15% target. Shareholders are also sharing the success with a 5% increase in the regular dividend and an additional special dividend of 8.8p, taking total dividends to over £1.5 billion since the IPO. Really proud of the progress we've made in 2015. Later on, Mike and I are going to tell you more about how we achieved it and how we intend to keep it going in 2016. So let me now hand over to John for the numbers.
Thanks, Paul, and good morning, everybody. Let's look at the financial highlights. As Paul says, we think it's a good set of results. Gross written premiums were up almost 2% versus the prior year, as motor premium grew by close to 5%. Ongoing operating profit was up around 3% to £521 million. With the biggest movement being a £27 million increase in underwriting profit, driven by better current year attritional performance. Installments and other was up a little to £151 million, whilst investment return fell £16 million to £195 million on lower AUM and reduced gains. Combined ratio was 94%, and within that, the total cost base down again to £885 million, a reduction of 4.6%. At a segmental level, all segments were profitable, with motor and rescue and other personal lines improving their profit, home broadly stable, while commercial was impacted by higher major weather event costs from the December floods. Turning to ISPs on the next slide, these were down 1.4% overall, but that masked an improving mix towards our own brands and direct. Starting with total motor and home, on the top left, you can see motor grew by 1%, whilst home was down 3.1%. But our motor and home own brands, which you can see on the top right, both grew, up 1.3% and 1.5% respectively. We believe that's a good result in a tough market, and it's down to giving customers better propositions combined with improved trading and supported by sharper pricing. On the bottom left, we split out partnerships to highlight the different trend we are seeing in this channel. Motor partners were down 3.5% during the year, while home partners were down 7.3%. This reduction mainly reflected lower new business given changes in the banking distribution model, and Paul will update you on partnerships later. In terms of the other segments, we've seen more mixed trends, but with direct generally performing well. Rescue policy count was down 1.1%, but Green Flag, our direct brand, grew 8.3%. And in commercial, headline IFPs were up 7.2%, with strong growth in direct, with policies up 7.9% during the year. Turning to premiums, which we'll all exclude IPT. Total gross premiums were up 1.7% during the year, with growth in motor, rescue, and other personal lines, offsetting lower premiums in home and commercial. We saw improving trends during 2015, and we'd like to highlight a few of these. Overall, motor premiums were up 4.8%, and on the top right, you can see that the rate of growth accelerated each quarter. Premiums were up an impressive 7.1% in the fourth quarter. In home, overall premiums were down 3.6%. However, the rate of reduction slowed from 4.8% in Q1 to 2.3% in Q4. These trends are reflective of the different market conditions across motor and home, which I'll come on to later. Moving down to the bottom left, the picture in rescue and commercial was a bit bumpier. In rescue, premiums were up 4.1%, but within that, we saw good growth in the first half of the year, slowing in the second half due to increased competition. And commercial, which ended the year with stable premiums, following growth in direct, which helped to offset competitive pressures in the regional business during the first half. All in all, a good performance from our own brands portfolio, particularly when you factor in the ITT change and increased shopping in the fourth quarter. The headline ongoing combined ratio improved by 1 percentage point to 94%, 1 point better than 2014. You'll recall that we gave guidance on core of 94 to 96% at the start of 2015, which we upgraded to 90 to 94% at the mid-year. All these numbers being normalized for major weather costs. Our actual core on this basis was 93%, which puts us in the middle of the upgraded range. The loss and expense ratios were stable with an improvement in the commission ratio. Below this, there were some positive trends, which we've highlighted in the waterfalls on the right. The total loss ratio was stable at 59.5%. Within this, we saw a 1.4% improvement in the current year attritional loss ratio. This was partly offset by a small reduction in the level of prior year releases and higher weather-related claims. The headline expense ratio remained stable at 23.6%, even though we reduced costs again in 2015. Costs in the second half of 2015 were lower than the prior year, but they were higher than in the first half. This was mainly due to write-offs on redundant software, property, plant, and equipment. As I mentioned earlier, our cost base was 4.6% lower in 2015. However, this improvement was offset by lower earned premiums. With GWP growth coming through in 2015, the pressure on NEP should abate going forward. We are saying today that in 2016, we expect total costs to be lower, although with a smaller reduction than in 2015, that's in part due to the cost of the flood re-levy. The commission ratio improved by 0.9 percentage points to 10.9%, mainly due to the impact of weather on profit share arrangements. Stepping back, we believe achieving a 93% normalized core and an improvement in the current year attritional loss ratio represents a good result. Let's now go into the ratio trends across the segments, starting with motor and home. Overall, a good result in both motor and home, with combined ratios in the low 90s, with both helped by lower current year loss ratios. In motor, the lower combined ratio was driven by the loss ratio, which improved by 3.4 points to 63.6%. The improvement came through the current year as prior releases were broadly flat. As we said, we made a change to the way we allocate margin in current year claims in 2015. This change led to a 2 percentage point reduction. The remaining 1.5 percentage points was primarily due to better performance in large bodily injury versus poor experience in 2014. In home, we saw lower commission and expense ratios, partly offset by a higher loss ratio, the latter being driven by major weather, which accounted for 10.7 points, with claims totaling £90 million in 2015, compared with £63 million in 2014. In terms of the current year attritional loss ratio, our initiatives, together with a better underlying claims environment in home, resulted in a 3.5 percentage point improvement in the current year attritional loss ratio, which fell to 45.8%. Prior year releases in home were down a bit to £42 million. Slide 10, we've got the ratios for rescue and other personal lines and commercial. In rescue and other personal lines, the combined ratio improved to 91.2%. Within that, rescue combined ratio was up 0.8 points to 82.3 percentage points, 3%, partly offset by an improved core across other personal lines. The rescue and other personal lines loss ratio increased to 59.9%, and this was mainly due to changes in partners' pricing on the rescue and travel books following good claims experience in 2014. Finally, commercial reported a headline combined ratio of 104.5%, which is 5.7 percentage points higher than prior year. The commercial result was impacted by approximately 40 million of claims from December storms and floods, about 20 million more than normal. Normalizing for this and other large claims gives a core of approximately 99%, similar to the previous year. At 12.9 percentage points, commercial continued to experience large prior year reserve releases as in previous years. You can find more commentary in the appendix where we've included the usual segmental P&Ls. Now let's take a look at motor in more detail with the familiar pricing and correct claims trends. Starting with claims. You'll recall at the half year we said claims inflation was running slightly ahead of the long-term average. However, the good news is we ended the year back within the range, albeit towards the top end. So let's elaborate on that. Taking large BI first, we've seen an improvement in our incurred claims on both the 2014 and 2015 accident year. While some of this is natural volatility, we now have more certainty that some of the increase we've spoken about over the last 18 months is down to faster recognition of large cases. Moving on to the shorter tail perils, damage severity seems to have settled down following the uptick we saw in the first half, but this has been replaced by a slight uptick in frequency in the second half. This has also affected small BI, but we still believe we've outperformed the market over a longer time period. Moving down to pricing, we increased prices by 7.7% in the fourth quarter year on year, taking the annual increase to 5.8%. Taking the year as a whole, our pricing reflects our 2015 claims trends, plus an element of catch-up from the 2014 claims experience. The eagle-eyed amongst you may have spotted that the full-year movements don't quite add across. This gap is explained by the improvements we've made to the direct line proposition in 2015. The investment in guaranteed hire car as standard, removing some admin fees, means we've given up a bit of other income, which would have come through the premium line. Moving on to slide 12, we have the usual chart. Moving on to slide 12, showing the accident year development on a growth basis. The majority of prior years have continued to develop favorably, combination of our prudent approach to reserving and the operational improvements we continue to make. Total motor prior year releases were $267 million in 2015, or 21.4% of premiums, which as expected was lower than the prior year. Two key points I'd like to cover here. First, the 2014 position is still showing a deterioration versus last year, which we discussed at length at the half year. But the position did improve in the second half, and on a net basis, it's now only 1.2 percentage points higher than our initial pick. We believe we're well reserved here and over time would expect this to run off favorably. Secondly, 2015's initial loss ratio pick is lower than 2014, and that's consistent with the year-on-year improvement in current year loss ratio. The 2015 accident year loss pick is broadly in line with the view at half year. As has previously been the case, the releases in recent years have mainly been driven by improvements in the actuarial best estimate, reflecting our conservative approach. The margin above actuarial best estimate remains higher than at the IPO. Looking ahead, we'll continue to reserve conservatively, and assuming current claims trends continue, the contribution from prior years is expected to remain significant, albeit will reduce over time. Now let's look at home pricing trends, and here you can see our own brand average premium movements fit into price and risk mix. The home market continued to deflate during 2015 and remains highly competitive. This increased competition in home is driven by a number of factors, including channel changes, lower insurance rates, and good underlying claims performance. We maintained our competitiveness across our strong own brand portfolio, growing policy count by 1.5% during the year. Our underlying claims picture in home, disregarding the major weather, has been good, with overall inflation running below the long-term average. This, together with our initiatives in pricing, meant we were able to reduce our own brand risk-adjusted prices by around 3% in the fourth quarter year-on-year. This brought the overall reduction for the year to around 2.4%. The improving risk mix in home is largely due to our high retention, which increased again, and technical pricing development. We believe that our ability to protect value in home is a result of our high retention rates, strong propositions, and continued investment in pricing and claims. Now for a look at investments on slide 14. Headline assets under management stood at around $6.8 billion at the end of December, 3.3% lower than the previous year. On the top left, you can see we maintained an income yield of 2.4%, but on lower AUM, this generated slightly lower income of £166 million. The overall investment return was 2.9%. We recognized £29 million of gains in the year, most of which was as a result of fair value increases on the investment property portfolio. Moving across to the portfolio allocations on the top right, you can see actual versus our updated benchmarks. In 2015, the primary addition to the investment portfolio was in infrastructure debt, where we invested an additional $253 million as part of our ALM strategy. We had planned further investments in commercial property during 2015, but this was limited by the availability of assets at the right price. we continue to develop our investment strategy and have made some further changes. First, a new commercial real estate lending mandate, which will invest in investment-grade UK commercial real estate loans, floating rate, where we're making a 3% allocation. Secondly, we're diversifying our existing investment-grade bond portfolio by establishing a new global credit mandate. Thirdly, we're setting up a separate investment-grade sub-debt mandate, which will replace the subordinated debt currently held within the existing mandate. And finally, we've increased the allocation to high yield from 4% to 6%. This will be funded from a reduction in securitized credit and investment-grade credit, and we began to do this in December. As we generally hold high yield to maturity and hold sufficient capital, we can cope with volatile markets such as we're currently seeing. You'll find the usual table of yields and durations by asset class in the appendix. Given market movements year to date, I wanted to show you a bit more detail on the high yield portfolio. On the bottom right, we split out the high yield allocation by sector, and you can see there's only a small exposure to basic industry and energy. After some realized losses in those segments, we earned a return of approximately 2%, and year-end AFS on this part of our portfolio was very modest. I thought it would be useful to wrap up investments by summarizing the outlook. Starting with AUM, this has been declining over recent years due to a mixture of lower volumes and capital management. Looking ahead, we don't expect this shape to change dramatically. In terms of yield, as you've heard, there's still some work to do to get us to our target allocations, and this should enable us to achieve a yield of 2.5% by the end of this year and 2.6% by the end of 2017. It's worth noting that we've assumed the first rate rise occurs in September 2017, a quarter of a point. Finally, gains. At the end of December, we had just 5.4 million of unrealized AFS gains on the balance sheet. And last week, it was around the same level. In any event, the opportunity to realize gains is quite limited now. On slide 16, the table shows how we get from ongoing operating profit of 529 million to profit after tax of 580 million. Just a couple of points to make here. Runoff profit was higher in 2015 due to better experience on large bodily injury. Restructuring and other one-off costs were broadly in line with guidance of 50 million. Looking ahead, we reiterate our expectation that we'll incur further restructuring costs and that these will be substantially offset by profit from runoff over a three-year period from 2015 to 2017. After all of that, profit after tax was up to 580 million versus 373 million in 2014, reflecting a better operating result and the capital gain and profit from the sale of international, which totaled 181 million. Today, we're announcing the final dividend and a second special. This takes the regular dividend to 13.8%, which represents just under 5% growth on the previous year. We also announced a special dividend of 8.8 pence, which is in line with our approach to return capital, where it is in excess. This takes the total dividend for the year to 50.1 pence. Since the IPO, we will have paid out over £1.5 billion of dividends to our shareholders, equivalent to nearly 60% of the IPO price. Following these dividends, our capital position still remains conservative as we transition into Solvency II. As you know, from the 1st of January, we have been operating under the standard formula, and at year-end, our coverage was 162% pre-dividends and 147% post. This compares with 148% at the end of 2014 on the old risk-based capital basis. We're on track to transition to internal model for our principal underwriter, UKI, as part of a group-wide partial internal model. This is, of course, subject to PRA approval, where we're hopeful to have that by mid-year. And at that time, we'll also update you on the recalibration of our risk appetite range. Moving to our internal model will reduce uncertainty over our capital position. However, we don't currently expect this will lead to a step change in the amount of capital we need to hold. In the appendix, we've included the split of standard formula by risk type and a shareholder's equity to own funds bridge. Leverage remains low at around 18% post-dividends, and our ratings from S&P and Moody's remain at A and A2. Before I hand back to Paul, let me just summarize some of the key metrics on slide 19. 2015 marks the third year of our progress since the IPO. We've improved the current year loss ratio again. Our total cost base was lower in 2015. ROTE was up again. We've also increased the regular dividend again and announced another special dividend while our capital remains strong. With that, I'll hand back to Paul.
Thank you, John.
I'm now going to take you through our excellent strategic progress we've made in 2015, and I'm going to hand over to Mike Carthy-Williams. I'll then come back and take you through the 2016 strategic priorities and our outlook for 2016. So, 2015 deliverables. The good results, which John has just outlined, are the result of hard work across the whole business. This all starts with a strategy which we re-articulated last year. As I said back then, the purpose of the strategy is to drive action. In 2015, we challenged ourselves with a stretching set of priorities designed to bring us closer to our mission, which is to be making insurance much easier and better value for our customers. At the beginning of the year, I said that when we have all these elements in place, then we can be a 15% ROTE business that can also grow when the time is right. On the slide, we've set out the same chart I showed you this time last year. And as you can see, we've done a huge amount of work and delivered against all of our 2015 priorities. We ended the year with an 18.5% ROTE, and for the first time in a number of years, we achieved growth across our own brand portfolio. So let me take you through how we did this. Starting with Great Retailer on slide 22. At the start of the year, I set out our top three priorities, which were to differentiate our brands further, to improve our customer experience, and to enhance our trading capabilities. In 2015, we strengthened our direct line offering and launched a really smart range of propositions which customers can only get by coming direct to us. Mike will tell you more in a minute. The results of our actions is that Direct Line is now once again the UK's most preferred brand for both motor and home insurance. We've also refreshed our famous Churchill brand, highlighting its dependability and appealing to customers who look for additional reassurance. Churchill is the second most preferred brand and is well placed to compete through price comparison sites. Our focus has also been on improving our trading capabilities, in particular optimizing our pricing across different brands and channels. In addition to this, we continue to invest in digital initiatives and rolled out new quote and buy journeys for home and Green Flag in 2015, building on the work we did in motor in 2014. We also invested in training and developing our customer facing teams, helping them to interact with our customers in a new and refreshing way. This has resonated well with our customers and contributed to rising net promoter scores. The great things our people have been doing for customers has been recognized externally with multiple awards. The metrics you can see on this slide are what you'd expect to see from a great retailer. The two most preferred brands in the market, improved net promoter scores, and strong and improved retention rates. Moving now to smart and efficient manufacturer on slide 23. In 2015, we delivered better pricing and improved our claims propositions, all at a lower cost. The Direct Line 7-day repair service we launched in 2015 is just one example of how we've combined our accident repair center ownership, supply chain management, and digital technology to offer our customers something unique, whilst at the same time improving our efficiency. A combination of an online portal, which allows us to review customers' photos early to identify which parts to order before the car arrives with us, together with the latest techniques such as new Nitrotherm paint system, has made the 7-day service possible. We've increased productivity per technician in the garages at the same time as reducing the number of non-value-added calls by allowing customers to track their repairs for themselves online. Better for customers and also better for us. We're rolling out this thinking to other areas of claims. You'll have heard me talk about our smartphone technology to assess home claims before, and now we manage over a third of eligible home claims this way. For these, it means that half of these customers are now seen the same day or the next day, compared with about 7 days previously. We're now using this technology as part of motor, home, pet, and travel claims journeys. Over in pricing, we continue to evolve our pricing sophistication and completed a number of projects in 2015 which aim to broaden our competitive quote footprint. We're also becoming smarter and more efficient at deploying pricing capabilities across the portfolio. For example, sharing pricing insights between personal lines and commercial lines means that we can compete better in the van market. Our people are the key to us being a smart and efficient manufacturer. In the second half of 2015, we launched what we refer to internally as Ideas Lab. This is a new initiative that gives our people the chance to share in the cost savings from their ideas. And to date, we've had over 4,000 entries. Putting all this together, you can see how we've reduced our costs again in 2015. Our final strategic pillar is about leading and disrupting the market. We believe change is a good thing and will be increasingly challenging industry norms. There's a lot of innovation in the market as a whole, and in order to remain competitive and relevant, we must continually adapt to the changing needs of our customers. Starting with telematics, where we ended 2015 with more than double the number of telematics policies we had at the start. Telematics gives us a rich and valuable data source with pricing insights that traditional rating factors simply can't reach. We've achieved this through further evolving our offering whilst broadening our distribution reach, and we now have over 78,000 policies. We believe this gives us a real advantage in the market, and Mike's going to tell us more about some of the developments and insights we've made in this area. Over in commercial, we believe we're well placed to take advantage of the changes to distribution in the SME market. The Directline brand continues to drive growth in commercial. We now have a real scale in the direct market with over 400,000 IFPs. Within that, we saw double-digit growth in our award-winning landlord product. Our focus on e-trading continued, and we launched more products on this platform in 2015. Not only did we grow, but we also were recognized as the number one e-trading provider in a recent broker survey. Together, Directline for Business and e-trade now make up over 80% of our commercial policies. We also developed new propositions and expanded our distribution reach. We launched a new professional indemnity product for our Directline customers and cyber cover for NRG customers, both of which are fully reinsured. Mm-hmm. On the distribution side, customers can now buy Churchill's business insurance direct from churchill.com or through two price comparison sites. Finally, turning to Green Flag, we've implemented a number of digital initiatives which drove 8% policy growth in 2015. We rolled out a new cleaner web journey with web chat functionality, and this delivered an immediate uplift in revenue compared with the previous site. Behind the scenes, we've been busy working on a big pipeline of future initiatives with a focus on digital. These initiatives are designed to improve the service we offer to our customers whilst retaining the value for money that Green Flag offers versus its peers. To go a bit deeper, let me hand over to Mike.
Thanks, Paul. At the start of 2015, Paul talked about our increasingly external focus and willingness to start challenging some of the norms of the industry and innovate in this marketplace. Well, that's exactly what we've been doing in Direct Line. 2015 was a particularly strong year for the Direct Line brand. We launched a number of unique propositions throughout the year. We removed mid-term administration fees. We introduced a seven-day car repair service. We delivered a guaranteed hire car proposition for all of our current and new customers. And we promised to have essential household replacement goods ready within 8 hours. Having launched a new quote and buy journey in 2014, we continue to see improved metrics across mobile and tablets with a 17% increase in usage in 2015. We've also improved our web and social media capability and offer 24/7 customer service through our web chat teams. The Fixer campaign with Harvey Keitel continued to perform well. All adverts have outperformed industry benchmarks, and as the campaign becomes even more familiar, scores are increasing with each subsequent advert. We've also delivered some great content to influence our social media audience, from helping people during tube strikes to recruiting Stuart Pearce for the worst football team in the UK. Our Fixer campaign reach has been going from strength to strength. Indeed, we were delighted to have been voted the most empathetic UK and US company on Twitter within a recent 2015 Harvard Business Review study. The results of all this is that we've seen an improvement across all our key metrics, including double-digit growth in awareness and consideration. Direct quotes grew by 6% in 2015, and new business sales grew by 4.5%. Brand NPS was up as our customers are now more willing to recommend us. In addition, we increased our already strong retention rate. Direct Line is once again the most preferred brand in both motor and home insurance, and it's fair to say we have no plans to put our most famous brand on an aggregator anytime soon. Indeed, we are positively encouraged by the numbers of customers that are cutting out the middleman once again. In the words of Winston Wolfe, we're on it. Now I'm going to just move to telematics. We said at the beginning of the year that we aim to double our telematics policy counts, and you've heard, and I'm glad to say we've achieved that, ending the year with 78,000 policies. Telematics is now very much established in the young drivers market. Nearly 60% of under 21s on Direct Line's new business are taking up telematics. Where we particularly improved our distribution in the last few months is on price comparison websites. Young drivers used to have to click through to get the telematics discount, whereas for privilege, we now lead with a lower price Drive Expert telematics policy. We've also made progress this year on our proposition for motor manufacturers, including the launch for Peugeot of a version of their Just Dead Fuel proposition with telematics. Claims performance continues to be excellent and more than pays for the telematics discounts. Our aim is for this increasingly to go beyond self-selection and for our telematics offer to lead to better driving. In 2015, we've launched new feedback initiatives, including regular feedback on driving behaviour through bespoke emails and outbound phone calls to the worst drivers. This is all going well, and we're starting to see improvement, but there's much more to come. The big question is whether and how telematics is going to move beyond the young driver market and into the mainstream. In 2015, we've launched a pilot cashback proposition delivered through a smartphone app, offering quarterly cashback rewards to customers for good driving. We're seeing a good degree of interest in this now. We've also been looking beyond telematics to the development of in-car technology. For example, today we've launched Green Flag Alert Me, which offers battery health and vehicle fault alerts via an onboard diagnostic device and a smartphone app. Safety technology is also an area of focus for us, and we've recently introduced discounts for vehicles with autonomous emergency braking fitted as standard. Beyond that, we're looking at more fundamental changes through autonomous vehicle technology. DLG became a member of Move UK, a newly formed collaborative R&D consortium being led by Bosch, which also includes Jaguar Land Rover. This consortium secured $5.5 million of government funding to develop testing and validation tools for automated driving technologies of the future. Our intent is to stay at the forefront of technological developments that are clearly going to have a benefit for our customers. Finally, just a few words about the floods. Steve and his team have really focused this year on making it much easier for our customers every time they make a claim. We were really able to demonstrate our customer focus during the floods caused by the storms Desmond, Eva and Frank in December. These three events generated just short of 5,000 claims. So how did we help our customers? Well, first, we were proactive and took a number of actions before the storms hit. We deployed our field teams in various locations, carrying tablets with customer details. They were proactively knocking on doors, providing advice and assistance to our customers, such as helping them to move items upstairs. We also sourced a considerable amount of alternative accommodation in advance, such as hotels, flats, and holiday homes. Once the storms had hit, we were there to ready to help our customers. Our mobile response centre, which we call Charlie, was set up in Carlisle and later on in York to enable customers to get advice, internet access, or indeed just a cup of tea. We also deployed our off-road vehicles in Cumbria, which meant we could get to areas that were inaccessible to many others. More than 80% of our flooded customers were visited within 7 days of reporting their claims to us. 51% of properties had work commencing within a week of notifying their claim, and about 20% of content-only claims were settled on the spot. You've heard how we're using video and photo evidence to enable us to assess, plan, and start work sooner and settle claims faster, but this is a really huge benefit in bad weather when claims volumes are high, because these images help us to prioritise face-to-face visits and minimise inconvenience and distress for our customers. The response from our customers has been really positive, and our NPS scores have increased significantly at this key moment of truth. We've had lots of positive feedback from our flooded customers, which is a really good reminder to us of why we do what we do every day. With that, Paul, I'll hand back to you.
Thanks, Mike. So our strategy is delivering results with benefits coming through in multiple areas, yet we still see significant opportunities to improve. As is traditional now, we set out in this slide our stretching priorities for the year ahead. Many of these will be familiar themes which we've already covered in depth today. Customers, costs, claims, pricing, and telematics. But I'd like to pull out three specific areas. starting with partners. Over the last few years, we've been focusing on improving our capability in respect of claims, pricing, digital experience, and customer propositions. And you can now see the benefits of this across our own brand portfolio. But the news on partners hasn't been so positive. You already know about Nationwide, and you'll see today that we're announcing an update on Sainsbury's. This is disappointing, but comes with the territory of being in this channel where partners do occasionally want to change or review how they approach the market. Looking forward, partnerships very much remain a key part of the distribution strategy for us, and we will leverage the excellent manufacturing base we're building to deliver market-leading partnership propositions. And a great example here is NatWest RBS, where we supported them with the changes to their product suite, including a 3-year fixed price home policy. We're in discussions with them over a 3-year extension to this home partnership, which will continue to include both the RBS and NatWest brands. The second priority I want to put out is how we're getting ready to launch the next generation of customer systems. This is a big piece of work for us over the coming years, with multiple systems and multiple releases, and we're looking to make significant progress this year. As you can see from our current trading, we're doing well, so we're taking our time to get this launch right. And finally, the piece of the jigsaw that makes it all happen are people. In 2015, we saw a 15 percentage point improvement in our full engagement from our people compared to 2014. We need to sustain this high level of engagement and performance in 2016. And to recognise the ongoing commitment to our people, today we have announced a third grant of free shares to each of our employees. So let me turn now to the outlook for 2016 on slide 29. The markets in which we operate have remained competitive in 2015 and into early 2016, and the increase in IPT has led to more customers shopping around. Taking the divisions in turn, motor premiums have increased, but this should be viewed in the context of rising claims costs, which John discussed earlier. In home, the market deflated during 2015, although underlying market pricing was broadly stable in the fourth quarter, excluding IPT. In the rescue and commercial markets, we observed increased competitor activity during 2015, and in particular in commercial, this accelerated during the year and into the first quarter of 2016. Against this backdrop, the group will continue to adopt a flexible but disciplined approach to managing the trade-off between margin and volumes. Our reserves are strong, and we expect prior year releases to remain a significant feature of our results, albeit at a lower level than in 2015. Furthermore, we expect total costs to be lower in 2016, although with a smaller reduction than in 2015, in part due to the costs of the flood re-levy. We continue to invest in building future capability, as I've just taken you through. Taking all this together, our core guidance for 2016 is to aim for a core in the range of 93 to 95%, which of course assumes normal annual major weather claims for home and commercial. Finally, of course, our 15% ROTE target remains ongoing. So before I finish, a few brief key messages. In 2015, we delivered a strong performance by delivering better service for our customers. Our multi-year investment program is delivering improved competitiveness, but there's still plenty of opportunity for us in the future. At the same time, we've maintained our focus on improving our efficiency and reducing our cost base. We're also increasingly challenging the market norms and aim to be at the forefront of evolving trends. Finally, we continue to offer good returns for our shareholders, having grown the dividends by around 5% and announced another special dividend. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We'll now take your questions, initially in the room and then latterly on the phone. Starting here.
Good morning. Three questions. Dhruv Gerard from HSBC. Firstly, on the legacy portfolio, could you quantify how much reserves are tied in into the legacy portfolio and the capital which is against that book? Secondly, could you also talk about margin booking for 2016 year as in post what you've done in 2015? And thirdly, on Solvency II, you mentioned about required capital being broadly unchanged. Could you talk about what happens to the available financial resources?
Thanks, Drew. Can you just repeat the third question?
Under Solvency II, you've talked about having a required capital which is broadly unchanged once you do the transition to the internal model. Can you talk about the resources as well?
Sure. Well, let's start with the runoff book. There's 350 million of net reserves in that book. It's actually in the prelim somewhere. And about 100 million of capital allocated to it. On margin, so just to be clear, I think we were talking about current year margin. So as we talked about the half year, and in fact at the beginning of the year, we have had decided not to automatically put a margin on the current year for motor, and that has been part of the driver of getting our attritional loss ratio down by about 3.5%. It's about 2% of the 3.5%. And we expect we'll maintain that policy this year. So we said it would be a one-off improvement in 15, and so if we maintain that policy, it will have been a one-off improvement in 15 of 2%. The third question, and the reason I asked you to repeat it is because I think the words I used were our capital position. Don't expect a step change in our capital position, which obviously reflects both the resources and the requirements. So I'm combining both of those together, really, because we obviously on the internal model we haven't said either today, and I'm asking you to be a little bit patient because we'll know hopefully everything there is to know about that in 6 months from now, or a bit less than 6 months from now. But we just make a very broad statement about the total position, taking both of those into account. Okay. Yes.
Hi, Andy Hughes from Macquarie. A couple of questions. The first one is about small bodily injury claims. I think you said your frequency is up, but when I look at the slide in the chart, it shows that everybody else's frequency isn't really up on slide 36. So is this a deterioration of you relative to your peer group? And so on reserve release, obviously, the 2014 year, obviously you've strengthened the reserves during the course of this year. Does that mean you strengthened the actuarial best estimate? And are you kind of, obviously in your reserve release comments, your reserve release in future is going to be coming from 2013 and prior, or is there still lots of fat in 2014 and 2015 years? Thank you.
Yes, so small bodily injury, against our expectation for the year, our current view is that it's been slightly elevated, but it's not a huge amount. So it's nothing we're too worried about. The trends on about the portal trends, yeah, we still think we're outperforming, but obviously we have a sort of advanced view of how we'll do, and we're just saying, and that's built into our inflation estimate and our pricing. And what we're saying is, on that particular peril, we haven't done quite as well as we thought at the beginning of the year. That doesn't mean that's consistent with either doing better or worse than the market, I think. So obviously, when we look at our own pricing, look at our own claim statistics, what we expect to happen in claims, it reflects our actions and our portfolio, not the market as a whole. On the second one, which is reserves, yeah, so we strengthened 2014. It was actually both AB and margin strengthened for 14. We do think we're going to get releases from 14, or I do, in 15 or potentially in subsequent years. And, you know, we think 15, we've been prudent as usual. And obviously you've seen it on those graphs. You can see what's tended to happen in prior years. You know, bodily injury is one where we're particularly conservative. So you might expect to see some of that too.
Okay, we'll stay this side. Ravi.
Morning, it's Ravi here from Goldman Sachs. I had three questions, please. So the first one was on the combined ratio guidance. If I look at the normalized level of your combined ratio this year, it's 93, and obviously the guidance is for 93-5. I appreciate there's going to be a kind of headwind in terms of lower reserve releases going forward, but I was just wondering if you could kind of walk us through how to think about that target in that context. The second question was on going back to the motor attritional loss ratios. Two points was due to the reserve margin change, I understand. And then there's another 1.5 points. How much of that 1.5 points is due to motor excess bodily injury? If you could share that with us, that would be great. And then the third one was just on price comparison website distribution. You'd made a comment in one of the previous quarters that sales via that channel was starting to slow. I was just looking for an update on that, please.
Sure. So I'll do 1 and 3, John, let you do 2. So on the core walk, start at 93, headwind from lower prior year, partially offset by hopeful some improvement in in current year and expense ratio. And as John says, you know, our efforts to reduce our expenses in absolute terms are obviously have been offsetting a reducing NEP, which hopefully will at least stabilize. So that's the walk. I'll do PCWs. So yeah, we slightly different trends between motor and home. Home price comparison websites continue to grow, largely at the expense of the bank branch channel. And in motor, it's pretty stable with kind of not a fight back, but certainly a maintenance of the direct channel, partly because of what Direct Line's doing, I think, you know, respect to what Aviva's doing. So, you know, the direct people are giving customers reasons to come direct.
And on the 1.5%, the attritional loss ratio improvement, that's not the margin. Yeah, BI excess is a big part of that, but it's not all of it. There is some improvement from pricing, but BI excess is a big part.
Right. Okay, we'll just do this too. Cool.
Yeah, so Gordon Aitken from RBC. So three questions, please. On the 2014 accident year, I mean, I can understand very few claims have probably settled there, but more time has elapsed. Just wondering, I mean, you mentioned before more cyclists, more over 75. Is there anything that you can sort of take from that year, that things you would do or things you wouldn't do? That's the first question. Second one is, I mean, you've introduced lots of new initiatives and lots of them very, very helpful for customers, you know, things like the smartphone technology. Just wondering, you know, where the gains come from. Cost of claims, efficiency, retention, new business, is it all of those or is it one area in particular where you really get the gains coming through? And just finally, the Stuart Pearce thing, I heard the story. I knew you were behind it. I heard his game was cancelled. I don't know what happened when he actually played that match.
Okay, I'll let Mike do the last one first.
He's not played yet. Still waiting to see that one.
He did a training session at Bisham Abbey, though, I think. So I think the team are in good shape. But, you know, listen, we're doing stuff with bloggers and everything. I mean, I think people ask us, why aren't we on TV talking about telematics? It's because at the moment our telematics offer is aimed at younger people, and younger people, you know, social media is where it's about. And we've got a cracking team doing initiative after initiative on it, and it's they're really proud of what they're doing. I mean, I think the initiatives, you know, and in fact on our generation and next generation systems, is a fantastically synergistic benefit of same things which are better for customers, save us costs, you know, a better customer experience, makes customers more likely to stay with us and buy more things from us. So, you know, it's not in one area. The nature of the business case of all this stuff is pretty widely spread. Sometimes we also do things, of course we do a business case, but we do things because we think it's just the right thing to do in our market and for our customers. So guaranteed hire car, you know, was an investment. It took us ahead of the market. Business case was, you know, we could get it to be a bit, you know, a bit positive, but actually we had a conviction in it, and actually it's come through with stronger results than we thought, really differentiate ourselves in the market. You know, you saw a comparison table in there, which looks like what retailers or people do to compare what they do with competitors. So I think it's fantastic for us to be, as a great retailer, you know, really into that space. So, no, these things have multiple benefits.
Yeah, on the other question on 2014, have we taken any action? Well, I think we, Mike may want to add, but certainly for older drivers, we did take some action in terms of pricing. So there was an action there. I'm not sure whether we've done anything on cyclists, that we found anything we can do on cyclists.
Anything that we would learn, I don't think there is much on cyclists, yeah, that we've seen. So. But amazing, well, pedestrians are the other thing, isn't it? Yeah. More individual pedestrian accidents. But I think it's random. I still think we wouldn't take anything forward, didn't do anything different in 15.
Well, the other thing about 14 is we said we had a theory. Some of it was just faster recognition in our claims processes, and it's looking like that is still going to be a bad relative year, but that is a reason to kind of give us some confidence that, as John said, it will develop favourably in future. So, I think more. Okay.
Can you hear me? This thing's miles away. James Shuck from UBS. I had three questions, please. If I look at the loss picks you show on slide 13, it looks like 2015 is around 92%, and you're booking at a slightly lower level of conservatism. I appreciate that number will run off positively, but if I look at your expense ratio, 24%, that's adding up to 116. So, you know, even if I allow for 15 points or so, you're still writing at 100. So could you just sort of give me some insight into what you think the fully developed kind of combined ratio is on motor, please? That's my first question. Secondly, on claims trends in the second half of the year, Well, first off, really, I suppose I'm keen to understand what the market is doing. You mentioned your own claims inflation is around 3 to 5%. Pricing for the market is probably up 7 or so. So you're doing slightly better than the market. Would you say that actually the industry margin and the outlook is actually turning, or are prices just keeping track with claims inflation across the industry? And then thirdly, I'd welcome any insight you can give around the impact of net promoter scores, because it's one thing to focus on better customer servicing and another thing seeing all these feedback things. But have you actually done any research that actually points to what it means in terms of revenues and cross-sell, please?
Great. Let me do the last one first, and Mike can build on this. The reason we've been winning awards on customer service isn't just we do it speculatively, it's that we can absolutely correlate net promoter scores and retention rates, and we think it's money well spent. And we do it all the way from training the people. People get instant feedback, which is linked to how we reward them, and we can see all these things kind of cross-tabbing. We can actually also cross-tab employee engagement. So there's a real science, and the reason we win awards is we can make those causal links. So we think it's money well spent. Our retention rates are, really good, and they've gone up. So we'll give you some more award entries if you want, because it's pretty. It's really impressive. So we can pull that out and share that.
I take your word for it that net promoter score is increasing, but I'm interested to know in the work you've done behind the scenes that actually shows that revenue increase.
Yeah, one of the times, obviously we do net promoter score by individual person, so which is the real strength of it. So what we can then correlate is, what's the feedback from that customer as a result of that net promoter score, or what the complaints are by net promoter score. So then you get a correlation between those with high net promoter scores, are delivering a better level of satisfaction or delivering a better level of retention, getting reduced levels of complaints, et cetera, et cetera. So an individual level, it makes a real powerful difference. And then clearly we're trying to shift the whole spectrum of that up. So it is really powerful. And the biggest correlation was back to people engagement as well. Needless to say, the people with the highest engagement themselves have got higher NPS scores, which makes the business a brilliant culture to work in.
And the board is all over this. Yeah, we have retailers on the board. We've got Seb James on the board. He gives challenges on all our targets and ambitions all the time to just keep doing better on this. But we don't do it from a charitable motive. We do it from we think it's good business as well. It's also nice.
Just on the first point, I think obviously we do require to make a profit on an ultimate basis. I mean, that's how we run our business, and that is what we believe we are making. Obviously, it comes out in different ways, and lots of it comes out through PY, but we do believe we're making profit on an ultimate basis, and we believe we can improve that profit through what we do on expenses, on claims, and on pricing. So it's our intention to make that, to improve that as we go forward. So the answer is yes, we can make good money on that basis if you put aside all the prior year in accounting. On pricing and claims, about, I don't know whether you want to talk about that. What we're saying is claims for the industry has returned to more like normal levels, and pricing seems to be reflecting that broadly. We've been able, partly because of the proposition of stuff you've heard about, to get our pricing a little better than that, which we needed to do because we had a bit of we needed to catch up a bit on what happened in 2014. So we're reasonably comfortable with that. And our ability to get those prices through, and I think that's a tribute to all the work we've done. Looking forward, I mean, we don't look forward on pricing, but we're saying the conditions in the first few weeks aren't that different. You usually get a bit of volatility because Q4 is quite a patchy quarter, and then Q1, some people have big price cuts, and there've been a few of those, maybe not as much as last year. Yeah. There's still IPT and lots of shopping happening. It's a little bit uncertain as to how things are going to go.
Mm. Our call centre has never been busier. I mean, I think the other thing we said we think Solvency II has been as hoped, a level of playing fields between jurisdictions as well as players. So I think that's potentially a positive for having a very functioning marketplace level playing field. As we said, I think Q1 started off as pretty much as second half did on motor, and actually slightly more positive, a bit of a respite from the deflation in the home marketplace, but loads of shopping. Our call centre is never busier, but actually, with extra shopping, we're doing pretty well because we're competitive. We've got good brands. We've got good propositions. So, that's enough about the market. Yes.
John Hocking from Morgan Stanley. I've got three questions, please. Going back to the Solvency II point, is that sort of backtracking from where we were at the first half? I seem to remember the first half is a little bit of a stronger statement that maybe there's some excess that's obviously going to come back at the interims? First question. Second question, on Flood Re, is this just something for you that increases costs, or is there an opportunity here in terms of the addressable market increasing other uninsurable claims, which are suddenly insurable? And then just finally, on the partnerships, except the fact you're still committed to that segment, but how does that square with the additional functionality you're building into your product? And does it make sense to supply that on a white label basis, or is there something you're going to do with a less attractive product through the partnership channel? Thank you.
So listen, I think the news on partnerships, let me, deal with the fact that we've lost two. I think one of them we lost for reasons not entirely of our making. There's a different approach being pursued. I think the other one, the degree to which we lost it is a reflection of our proposition. It was a reflection of our proposition probably 2 to 3 years ago. And the proposition as of today, I think we're really competitive because we do allow partners to benefit from a lot of things we're good at, which is a reason to kind of come to us. All our stuff, doing our digital customer experience stuff, we do share with partners, albeit our propositions on Direct Line go further. But our different partners want it tuned to different things. We're developing quite differentiated propositions for RBS and NatWest to do what they're trying to do. The gestation period for partners is quite long, so it takes quite a long time to lose them. It also takes quite a long time to gain them. So, as we now are in the market saying we've got a good partnership proposition which will only strengthen, that's not going to immediately turn into brand new partners, but we're really encouraged by the progress we're making on a new deal with RBS NatWest. Not signed, sealed, and delivered, but good progress. And in the future, I'd love to win partners, either conventional partners or actually, the next generation of partners, anyone with customer data, customer access, a brand, could be a good partner in insurance. So we want to be the go-to people for the next generation of partners that really value slick digital interaction, and all the things that we're good at. Flood Re, so the certainty of Flood Re is the levy, the £24 million. That's just a maths on our GWP. The amount of premiums we pay to Flood Re is our calculation of how many homes flood costs is more than the £250 to £600-ish charges, which is driven by council tax. So we would only put in kind of, and that's quite high flood risk, right? So that's not millions of homes that have a flood component of their risk cost of £250 to £600. So it'll be quite restricted to, pretty high history of flooding and pretty close to rivers and all that stuff. It's not going to be mass. But what that does do, we can go back into the Henley market probably, because we have been a little bit, all our flood modelling means probably people in this room, posh homes by rivers. We needn't be shy of that for the reason of flooding. So I think, yes, it will, there are some upsides. So definitely a cost downside of levy. Whether the market price saw that, I don't know. It's a pre-market, very competitive, and I don't make any forward-looking pricing statements. How much we recover depends on the floods and how many homes we put in. And then I think a relatively modest opportunity, I'd say, to get back into certain places that we've been a bit shy of underwriting.
Solvency II? So let's just unpick that a bit. The internal model that we have obviously has a lower requirement than the standard formula, otherwise we wouldn't be doing it. And it's a much more accurate portrayal of our risks. So that's a positive. On the other hand, it hasn't been validated by the regulator yet. And then we haven't yet set our risk appetite around it. So our risk appetite on the old system was 125 to 150. I don't think there are many companies who've come out with a bottom end on the new system of as low as 125. There may be some. So that could be a bit higher. And I think the range could be wider because it's a bit more volatile. That's another aspect of it. Then the next aspect is the risk environment isn't changing because of Brussels or even because of London. The risk environment's a risk environment, and we kind of hold the capital we need for the risk environment. The one bit of the risk environment that will be improved when we get our internal model approved, assuming we do, is that we won't be uncertain about that anymore, because at the moment we've been sort of holding a bit of excess capital against that uncertainty. So we hope that's going to be released, if you like, that part of the risk will be released. I think you have the experience that we don't hoard and we tend to be transparent and we have paid quite a lot of dividends, including special dividends. So I think, in most periods, we generate more than our regular dividend of retained earnings. So I think putting all that together, You know, there's ground to be a little bit optimistic about the half year if that all comes through, but there's a lot to go through, and therefore we think overall, given the risk environment hasn't really changed, it probably isn't going to be a step change. We're basically asking people to be a bit patient, and we'll know much, much more then. So I hope that kind of answers. Have we backtracked? Well, I'm sorry if we have. You'll probably have to quote me, but I don't think we have. But you know, if we have, I apologise.
Okay. Yes, Lars.
Hi, it's Farooq Khani from Citigroup. I wanted to go back to that point about Solvency II. So you've kind of partially answered the question, but you seem to be suggesting that obviously uncertainty about Solvency II generally is required you to hold capital at the upper end of your RBC range, even with your special. So, you know, we don't know what the new capital range will be, but are you suggesting you'd be more willing to move to the middle point of that range than your partial internal model?
I think really that's, I've probably said all I can say. I mean, there's lots to play for here, with or without Stuart Pearce. And, you know, we'll that's all work we've got to do, essentially. You know, I wouldn't want to, I certainly wouldn't want it over many, many periods to hold the top end of the range, you know, make it a perpetual thing. But then we haven't set the range yet, so.
Portfolio changes you're making, am I correct in thinking it's going to be quite a modest increase in SCR for that? And the last question was actually going back to the propositional changes that you talked about. Are you suggesting that there is a clear combined ratio profit improvement from what you're doing, or is it really about retention and volume? So, for example, you know, the guaranteed car, etc. So, are you going for actual, you know, combined operating ratio improvement from your initiatives, or is it really about proposition and just keeping volume?
I think it's a bit hard to take the sugar out of the tea, frankly. And so, our core guidance is our core guidance, which puts everything together. I think if we don't, it's very hard to know if you hadn't done stuff what exactly would have happened. And for me, you know, rewarding our direct line customers for free with enhanced propositions is a good long-term business thing to do. You know, we see some immediate benefits. We see some immediate deficits if we give something free that we gave before. I think so far we've been validated in our assumptions we made on direct line, hence us pulling it out as a positive narrative, and I think we'll continue to do things like that in the future.
We have a customer value model, so we look at the long term over what the customer will deliver us, taking into account their retention behaviour and, you know, our pricing behaviour and so on. So it's on that basis, yeah, at least we're doing it on a positive, you know, because there's a positive cash flow from it. It may not come through 1 year's call.
John?
On the investment side, there will be some capital used, but when we do an investment portfolio change, we want to make sure we get a return on capital on that that's not dilutive to our overall return on capital.
Yep.
Fernando, Peel Hunt. Just coming back to the cost savings and the potential for cost savings in the next 3 years, I know you're reluctant to give a sort of absolute number, but when you think about the potential, is it mainly coming from claims handling? Is it mainly distribution and distribution mix? Or is it actually the retention? And have you calculated for every 1 percentage point improvement in retention, how much that saves in sterling million?
Yeah. So cost savings, I think I feel validated in not giving actual specific pound target by the fact that A, our costs have gone down 4.6%, £200 million since the IPO, our engagement's gone up so significantly, at the same time, and we've improved our brands. And I think one of the dangers of a pound cost savings, you get to September, October, you're not going to make your external target. What do you cut? You know, training, overtime, brand investment, and that's precisely what we haven't done by having the wiggle room of you trusting us a little bit on when we're going to get there. I think the all of the big headings to get big cost savings in the future, you need to tackle your big headings. You know, IT is a big cost, which you need to be vigilant about. You know, we continue to drive efficiency through our people, digital channels, robotics. We are judiciously users of offshoring, which is a, you know, initiative we do very, very carefully. We always check that the quality and the customer service is okay, but we've been doing a bit more of that, India and South Africa. So we've got a number of drivers. I mean, ultimately, probably more in the kind of the outer years of the plan, self-service is kind of the biggest probably concept we have in further cost savings, because you know, as I've always said to you, you know, how, when was the last time you phoned British Airways, or you know, you probably wouldn't even get a number for Uber. You know, we're in a world now where low involvement transactions, you know, customers want to do and are happy to do for themselves. There's always a role of our people in more complicated things, where customer knowledge is needed, handling emotional claims, et cetera, but we do think probably as a medium to long-term opportunity, self-service is a kind of, you know, is a concept. Yes.
Hi, I'm Alan Devlin from Barclays. A couple of questions. If flood relief had been in place for the winter storms, would you have had any material recoveries from it? And then just secondly, on your investment income, if you hadn't been re-risking the portfolio, what would have been the portfolio yield? How much would that have been declining given the low rate environment? Thanks.
So some, but by no means not all, because as I said, it's the really, really high risk ones that definitely you'd put in. And the kind of the rule of thumb is, yeah, at least £250 to £600 is the premium we pay to cede that risk. And that's only one part of the multiple perils. So if someone's paying an overall cost, I won't give you a rule of thumb, but you can kind of work it out. So it would have given us some, but by no means all. It's a relatively small part of the of that. Still worth doing.
One way to think about that second question on the counterfactual on the investment, and we just talk about some of the reinvestment rates at the moment. Infrastructure is about 2.5, high yield is about 4. The typical IG credit would be about 2, gilts would be about 1. So you get a sense of that, and I'm sure you can model better than I can what would happen. But it would make quite a significant difference. Property as well, obviously quite a big, it's got the biggest yielding element.
Andrew?
Good morning. It's Andrew Queen, it's Autonomous. So there are three questions. Firstly, as you re-risk the investment portfolio, do you think it is still right to carry unrealized and realized gains through the P&L account, having them capitalized at 15 times? Secondly, could you say whether you're happy with the capital stack that you've got, or might you consider increasing the debt and returning equity? And thirdly, if we go to slide 44, I think the move between your IFRS equity and the capital available, there's about a £203 million positive benefit, I'm assuming, from moving the reserves from an IFRS conservative basis to a best estimate basis. Is it fair to say that £203 million is a good view of the amount of conservatism you've currently built into your IFRS reserves?
Investment body, I think your question was about market's valuation of our profits. I think.
Well, no, we
disclose what our gains are.
Spending basis, you don't have to carry those through the P&L. They could go through OCI.
Well, I think we're pretty clear about what we do, and it's down to you experts to decide what value to put on them. I really, you know, I think. Secondly, on the debt, we look at that often. I think my response is the same as it's been, which is we clearly do have some debt capacity. I would rather you have that as rainy day money, and there may be an opportunity that comes up where that would be extremely useful to have. If we paid it out, if we geared up and paid it all out, that'd be a one-off. You know, people might be grateful that day, but then I wouldn't have that capacity for some future opportunity. And I think we do like to reward shareholders with cash, and I think we've been decent at doing that. In terms of the what can you read into that bridge there on the IFRS to standard formula capital? Obviously, you're right. I mean, reserve reserves is an aspect, but it's not the only aspect. There are other things going on. To do with, for example, the risk margin, which is quite formulaic, under standard formula. There's elements to do with our actuarial best estimate and margin, and there's ENIDs coming in the other way. So quite a lot of moving parts. And it sounds like we should probably explore that further when we see you next. Well, once at Q2.
Yes. Second half.
Hi, thanks so much. Andy Hughes from Macquarie. A couple of follow-up questions. The first one is on other income. I think you mentioned in your presentation that some of the changes you've made to the proposition were going to impact other income, but I think other income grew last year, so could you give us a view on that? And so coming back on Andrew's point on the reserve margin, if I understand it correctly, the reserve margin you're talking about when you give guidance on prior year profits is mainly margin, the actuarial best estimate, right? So it wouldn't be shown in this slide because this takes you down to actuarial best estimate. Is that right?
Just in terms of other income, what I said was that the income we lost by giving the away the by free admin charges and so on was not part of our income, part of our premium line. It wouldn't affect our other income line. It's additional income, but it's not technically other income. And in terms of margin and AB, let's deal with that when we've got the data.
Confident about renewing that deal? A margin reduction from where we are currently.
You wouldn't expect me to reveal the commercial terms. We are in the middle of conversations with them. Obviously, they're getting well enough for me to say we're having a conversation, but we haven't closed that deal. We've got a few more months of conversation with them to tie it up. So at that stage, obviously, what they're happy for us to disclose about the nature of the arrangements we'll think about. So at a future date, when we've got that inked, we'll tell you what we can do.
But the other deal, so you're saying on the other deal, it was a perception of what IT services you were prepared to offer, and this one you presumably would be prepared to offer.
What I'm saying is these things are take a long time to bake. I'm saying if there was an extent of the MBS thing being a judgment on the proposition in the wider sense, that was assessment probably when that decision was gestated probably 2 years ago. I'm saying as of today, our proposition, I think, is absolutely stands comparison in the market and is very good. I'm saying that's on the basis, obviously, that an evidence of that is the potential RBS deal, and evidence of it going, as you know, will also be hopefully over time we can win new partnerships, which is a stated ambition of ours. And then the commercial terms probably will stay shrouded in commercial sensitivity, but we haven't even, we still need to finalise the deal. Thank you. Right. Can we just check the phones and then we'll do any others? Yeah, we've got one, Anya, one on the phone.
Yes, we've got one question on the phone line from the line of Greg Patterson from KBW. Please go ahead.
Hey, Greg.
Morning, gentlemen. You thought you'd got rid of me, but it's not the case. I've actually got four quick questions. One is, previously you speak about the stock of margin in the IFRS balance sheet. You talk about 7%. I wonder where we are now, if you can give us an update on that. Second thing is, I wonder if you can just talk about the inflation, the year-on-year rate and the earned basis in the home book. Third thing, for RBS, I wonder if you can just give us an idea of what its current contribution is to net written premium. And the fourth and probably most important, we've seen a spike in motor premium rates in the fourth quarter. I'm trying to figure out to what extent that's because we have one or two players who have been very aggressive and finding themselves in trouble now and backing off, or if it's been a sort of uniform right across the market pain and everybody's backing off. I was just wondering if there's sort of any indication of the health or where the market's going to go, or we might see some people exit the market, these spikes we saw in the fourth quarter.
Well, your most important question, which is probably going to be least helpful, four is always, a slightly unreliable guide for the rest of the year. What we're saying is kind of Q4 into Q1 is kind of in line with the trends which we saw in the second half. The new news is the extra shopping driven by the price increases, which we think is a catch-up on claims inflation, plus IPT. So kind of that's the new news, but we're not calling out any kind of brand-new trends. But we are saying, the other thing I said was, of course, the Solvency II point and the level playing field across jurisdictions, which may be helping as well.
There's no player you haven't seen one or two players as back off dramatically. It's a bit across the market sort of phenomena in terms of the rate increases.
Yeah, it ebbs and flows, Greg. If you saw the chart, it looks a bit like the London Tube map. So it moves around, but I wouldn't say we're calling anything particular out, either in that or in home. RBS is roughly the same share of GWP as Nationwide was, roughly. A little bit less. Stock margin is higher than 7%.
Yeah, that's about it. That's what we're saying.
What do you mean by inflation in home, Greg? Claims inflation.
Yes, claims inflation. You basically say 3 to 5% in, or the high end of 3 to 5% in motor.
I mean, the good news on home is the attritional claims was actually really good in the year. If you look back, it was a very bad set of one-off weather, but actually through the year it was a very, very benign attritional claims environment, and that explains why we've got such a good loss ratio despite competitive pricing. And also claims handling costs were also, as a result of that, frequency of claims was down. So that helped our claims handling costs.
Long term, we still think that, you know, we plan for home inflation as well as motor inflation.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
So what is that, 1 or 2%? I mean, what is your...
Yeah.
And where are you relative to that 1 or 2%?
We plan for about
2 to 3%, maybe. 2 to 3%.
Yeah, and then where are you relative to that now? Ignoring the bad weather.
15 was better, but, you know, it was... You'll see all sorts of records being broken. It was the warmest winter and all that sort of stuff. So it was, all I'm saying, day to day, week to week, we didn't have any burst pipes. We obviously had 5,000 big claims at the end of the year.
Perfect. Thank you.
Very good. Can we do it and do it after if it's all right?
We have a question now from the line of Oliver Brindle from Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi there, good morning. I've just got two small questions left. The first one is just clarifying some of your comments that you made on the motor attritionals. So I think, John, you said 1.5 percentage points when we exclude the lower reserve margin that's being put in, and some of that being down to improved pricing. But you're also saying that rates were up 5.8, claims inflation probably around 5. So it's not obvious that you should have a benefit in your combined ratio from pricing. I think at the half year you said there was a negative of 0.9 percentage points because you still had that catch up to make for last year. So if you could maybe just clarify what that 0.9 would be for the full year. And then secondly, just you mentioned some write-offs on software, property, etc. How much was that, and is that a pure one-off, or can we expect anything more of that nature going forward? Thank you.
Well, on the costing, I think that we sort of said that we ended the year at about 220 million run rate. It can be bumpy between quarters. At year end, you look at some of these things, but you know, 880 for the year is kind of where we start the new year, the year that's really started. On the first point, I think we just said so it's an improvement over where we were at the half year, because we were worse by 0.9 underlying. Now we're saying we're better by 1.5. But as I said, most of that is due to improvements in bodily injury excess. Now we've had a proper look at 15, and there is some other improvement in there, but the main thing is the bodily injury excess.
Andrew, do you want to do quick?
When does the Sainsbury's premium drop out, and should we expect 80 million of weather losses now you've got Flood Re in?
We'll come back to the Flood Re, because we haven't decided what premiums to put in yet. We're still working that out, I think, Kate.
As we work our way through.
Yeah. But handful of million?
Yeah.
Not huge.
We're talking 17, aren't we? Yeah, you've been only
17.
Yeah.
So it'll wind down to 17, 18. Yeah, it's not huge. Good. So I was going to end if there's no more on the phone. Slightly unusually with a thank you to somebody. As many of you know, Neil, to embarrass him a little bit, is off to do a proper job running NIG. Glad we didn't get any questions on NIG, but I think it underlines how important the commercial market is that we're putting one of our stars into that. But I just want to thank Neil. Hopefully he's provided you with good service over the last 5 years. He's been invaluable to us getting through the IPO and getting to where we are today. So just to embarrass him a little bit, just a round of applause for Neil. That's fine. Good. And coffee outside. Come join us. Thank you.